Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Tuesday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. Is Anthony Davis finally becoming the guy the Lakers have been begging him to be for the last couple seasons? That's next.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, no matter how or where you get your podcasts. Appreciate you listening in or watching on YouTube, the Locked On Lakers YouTube channel, which is a great place to interact with the show, interact with other listeners, other viewers. Nice community developing over there, almost up to 9,000 subscribers, which we really appreciate. So thanks to everybody for your support there. Do want to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. As the world's largest therapy service, BetterHelp has matched 3 million people with professionally licensed and vetted therapists available 100% online. Learn more and save 10% on your first month at BetterHelp.com/LockedOnNBA. Apparently, Andy, I was so excited to get to the holiday that I introduced Monday's show as Wednesdays. So and neither one of us noticed.
Well, I mean, look, let's be honest. We are doing these shows, this week's shows, somewhat on tilt. We are in St. Louis visiting our parents for the holiday, and doing this show in certain respects is very catch-as-catch-can because there are a bunch of kids running around. People on different schedules. If anybody's
most
wondering
of them are ours, but I don't know. I mean,
if anyone's wondering why the room I'm in is so damn dark, it's because this is the one place I could be in that is not occupied. It's not ideal for this, but we press on.
Yeah. So in the games start really late here. Like tonight's game is 9 o'clock local tip off. That is too late for a sporting event to start. If I have to talk about it, you know, I am officially all games should be at 11 a.m. years old. I really believe that. But anyway, so a lot to cover. Lakers, this is a really, I think this is the game in this little stretch that people are looking at, because you got, you know, two more games against San Antonio and then Indiana. Even if the Lakers were to win those, I'm not sure people would fully buy in. Phoenix, Andy, Lakers play a good game against the Suns in Phoenix, against, you know, a team that is right at the top of the Western Conference. They'll enter the game with, I think, still tied for the best point differential in the league. Certainly, they finished Sunday's games with that. Like, this is a legit team. If Lakers go and play a solid game here, I think people will start to buy in a little bit more to, hey, maybe there's some validity to this three-game winning streak that they're on.
Right, and that gets into the question that we left off during Monday's show, the idea of how long do you think the Lakers are looking to feel things out before they decide either they need to make a definitive trade for this season, or they are convincing themselves that either they don't need to, I guess that's the glass half full version of this. Hey, we're good enough. We'll take our chances, see what rolls with the team that we got, or why bother, the glass half empty version, because this just ain't it. And we don't want to push in all our capital for a move that won't really help us this season. And we don't believe we'll do enough for next season, the two seasons that we know LeBron is under contract for.
Well, but there is a door number three here, I think, to a little bit degree. And it's sort of the next extension of, it's not, you know, that this season's can't be salvaged. It's that's what is there isn't enough of a difference maker. Like, you know, they believe that a Hield and Turner trade is only going to be worth a couple games. You know, it's not going to be worth 5 games, 10 games in the standing. It's not going to be the thing that differentiates barely scraping into the play-in and having a chance to advance a couple rounds. Because that's also like a calculus. Here's like, yeah, we think the season may be worth rescuing, except what we think is out there isn't going to be enough to do it. And I mean, that's a whole other issue of like, how good do you think subtracting Russell Westbrook and adding, adding Hield and Turner would be? but that could also be part of their calculus. I started talking about this though on Monday's show. I've just gotten increasingly convinced that this season it isn't like it's not the thing that they're going all in on. I think they are just looking at this as which gives us the best opportunity to be set up properly going forward. Waiting. Do we have a better chance of remaking ourselves into a contender by waiting for the summer and using our assets then? Or do we have a better chance of making ourselves into a contender by doing it now? And I think more and more and more and more, it's weight is where they are falling. And that's true whether or not they're 5-10, 7-10 in a few games, you know, back to 5. I'm not sure how much any of that matters.
Well, I mean, the biggest indicator that you could be right about this would be the idea that they didn't make a move heading into the season. Mm-hmm. Because if they were going to prioritize this season over next season, or I suppose if you really threaded the needle perfectly or just got lucky, things break the way you want, both seasons come out for the best. But if they really were making like this season the bird in the hand, the one that you are going to prioritize the most, then you try to handle the issues that everybody anticipated and frankly upended a lot of the season early on. You would look to take care of them ahead of time, because there were the tension that existed with Russell Westbrook and his role with the team, the tension that existed because of the roster imbalance, all that stuff, that was evident to everybody. I mean, I think even no matter what you think of this front office and, you know, their lack of acumen, I don't believe that they truly did not recognize the roster imbalance. They may have convinced themselves they did the best they possibly could under these circumstances, or that like a guy like Lonnie Walker, who to be fair to them has played well, is better as an acquisition than a wing for position purposes that isn't as talented as Lonnie, whatever. But you and I have been pretty critical of this front office the last few years. We've never expressed a ton of belief in them, but even I don't think that they were completely blind to this stuff.
No, I this is where the news that not just that Pelinka had an extension, but that Rob knew the extension was coming when they hired Darvin. That to me is critical evidence to like what you're saying about like how not making a move before the season starts indicates really what they believe. Because, and I think it's more, we don't think Buddy Hield and Turner does enough. And meanwhile, that's our team for the next, you know, three, with the Rob Pelinka view of how these things work, because he is, I think, as uncreative a front office executive as you're going to find. I think
I believe that worldview, Brian, is in part why they hired him.
Yes.
I'm not kidding. I'm being serious.
Yeah. You know,
worldview matches the Genie Bus worldview.
There are GMs out there who are like, you know what, let's roll with this, because I know I can red paperclip our way from where we need to be to where we need to go. And we'll make the best out of this. I'll turn Buddy Hield into something else. We'll sign and trade Miles Turner into something else. And, you know, I'll make this stuff work. I don't think Rob believes that. I think Rob, you know, believes in cap space. And that's it. That is all Rob believes.
Cap space and star power, right, which is very similar. I mean, ironically, given all the tension that existed before bringing in Magic and Rob, that was in a lot of ways the worldview of seemingly Jim Buss and Mitch Kupchak, because they operated
the worldview of the Lakers for years.
Yes.
I get it. I'm not saying I don't understand where it comes from, but I do think it's horribly outdated. And the biggest problem isn't so much that stars is a terrible way, you know, like it's wrong to want stars. It's like, no, like, we're going to get into this in the next segment. Like, Anthony Davis as a first team All-NBA guy, like playing at that level, light years different than Anthony Davis as an All-Star. Your top end talent matters a great deal in the NBA, but the way the Lakers do it, it leaves you with minimum roster guys, minimum, you know, throwing darts and hoping that they hit. Now, there is at least a chance. The other part of this that I want to get is I want to ask you before we move back to AD is whether you think the Lakers have at this point any other trade value on the roster. What would have to happen for the Lakers to be able to parlay anything else they have into value? Or is it just Westbrook? And then, you know, what's Russ's value? A little bit there, and then we'll turn back to whether or not Anthony Davis is finally becoming the player that the Lakers have been begging for. So all that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Turo. Turo is the world's largest car sharing marketplace. With Turo, you can book any car you want, whenever you want it, from a community of local hosts across the U.S., the U.K., Canada, and coming soon to Australia. Browse a huge selection of vehicles for just about any occasion or budget. Book an SUV or a minivan for a family road trip, a pickup truck for some bulky errands, even test drive that new electric vehicle you've always been curious about to see, does this work in my everyday life? Also, you can find affordable economy cars if you're on a budget or you just need to drive somewhere, because sometimes you just got to drive somewhere. Many tour hosts even deliver the car right to you. Every trip is backed by liability insurance. Terms and conditions and exclusions apply. Turo.com.
So, Andy, we get all the time these trade scenarios and this and that. We spent a little bit of time in an episode, I think last week, talking about whether or not Westbrook has actually created a little bit of value, just in the sense that if he, you know, what he's doing for the Lakers has value. If he's willing to do it for your team, come off the bench, play a meaningful six-man role and all that kind of stuff, that does make it so it is not an automatic that if you acquire Westbrook, you're just going to cut him. I think that dynamic is different if you think he'll do what he's doing for the Lakers for your team, and perhaps changes his value, makes it a little bit easier to trade him, and stuff like that. Is there anybody else that they could move that you think has even a slight bit of value to get players back? We see a lot of Kendrick Nunn, Patrick Beverley packages out there.
Yes, but not really. I mean, yes, in the sense that Patrick Beverley has a $13 million, I believe, expiring contract, and that's not completely without value in terms of whether or not the Lakers would be willing to take on similar but longer-term money in exchange for Beverley and the team just wanting to get off that money. And we've seen the Lakers seemingly are always reluctant to do that for somebody mm-hmm. that is not a star. So that in and of itself in some ways takes down Patrick Beverley's trade value, because if the Lakers aren't going to be flexible that way, then it decreases what you ultimately can get for Beverley in the first place.
Right.
But in all honesty, no, I don't really think they do, because let's just say, you know, Lonnie Walker has had a good start to the season. He has been better than you and I both thought he would be. We weren't mm-hmm. even 100% sure he'd have a role. Lonnie does not make enough money so you can move him out for anything significant in return. So in that sense, Lonnie's trade value isn't really that high, even if there are teams around the league who think what he's doing is real. Like the salary is so preventative in terms of bringing in somebody that could be just as helpful, if not more, and significant. In the most technical sense, yes, they have a little bit of trade value. In the most practical senses, no, not really.
Right. And because, like, you know, Walker too is in that space where if he does for your team what you would want him to do, you're going to have to, it costs a lot of money to re-sign him. So, you know, you don't get that benefit. You'd really only be like, you'd want him as a rental. That would be do you give up value for a rental? Not usually.
You know, will the Lakers, for example, like, would they package together Patrick Beverley, Kendrick Nunn for some type of like $18 or $19 million salary? I suppose it's possible, but is it only a $19 million salary that is expiring in return? Are they willing to take on, you know, the equivalent of a Buddy Hield from a different team, like high-end role player, but somebody with extra years on his deal, in which case you wonder, why not just Buddy Hield?
Well, you know, it would have to be that, because there's no incentive for a team to trade their $19 million expiring contract for the Lakers' $19 million.
Well, unless the Lakers are including unless they're including a first, but
correct, and that's a really I don't even want to go down that road.
Well, it's both a bad way to do business and also the way the Lakers have often done business.
Right, but that would be even worse.
So I guess in that sense, it increases Patrick Beverley's trade value because if it just means attaching a pick to it, never rule it out.
Yeah. So, but like as basketball players, Pat Bev has, I think, very little. There's not going to be a team out there that's willing to give up some form of value, I think, specifically because they want Patrick Beverley, specifically because they want Kendrick Nunn. Like, that's not a thing that is going to happen. I think we can all agree. So. Okay.
No.
So, let's talk about AD. And a lot of these things, the reason I even asked that question, one of the reasons is, A, it's relevant to the conversation we were finishing, but it's also relevant to the one we're going to have, because so much of what we talk about is at the margins, whatever. And fundamentally, it comes down to, is this team going to be one where Anthony Davis is the dominant player that the Lakers have been hoping for, you know, kind of asking for, calling for the last couple of seasons? Or is he just going to be really good? Because the difference between those two things is what's going to elevate the Lakers. And they can make nice trades and they can do little stuff and try to upgrade here and there. But ultimately, what Anthony Davis is light years more important than any of that.
Yeah. I mean, this has been a thing. I mean, we will talk about it to death until it eventually becomes something we no longer have to talk about at all. But the expectation had always been that Anthony Davis would be the engine of the proverbial car that LeBron is steering. And that has not happened to this point this season. And, you know, we talked yesterday about some of what would need to change with that. And whether you're talking about Anthony Davis's overall effect, whether you're specifically talking about his presence in the fourth quarter, because that had been something before LeBron got hurt. There had been three or four games where combined Anthony Davis had something like five shot attempts and four combined points, which is just ridiculous.
It was ugly.
Right. That cannot happen. And I remember you and I were talking yesterday about James Worthy's comments that, you know, it might require some type of conversation between LeBron and AD about, you know, AD being more of that takeover guy in the fourth quarter. And we were arguing about the validity of that and, you know, how much of this is LeBron, how much of this is, you know, LeBron letting it happen versus AD not pressing enough for it to happen, whatever. But the reality is, if you look at this team with LeBron and AD, their four seasons together, going back to the championship season, where we all agree that was the best version of Anthony Davis, in the fourth quarter, LeBron James, regular season and playoffs, averaged more points per game, more field goal attempts per game. That was in the first season. It has been that way every single season they've played together. Conversely, the first quarter, the setup quarter, basically every single season they've been together, including this season, Anthony Davis has averaged more points and field goal attempts per game than LeBron, which I think speaks to that perception, narrative, habit building, whatever you want to call it, where AD is the guy that sets everything up, sets that table, builds the foundation for a hopeful win. And LeBron, who has been thought of as a closer his entire career, once people accepted the idea of him being a closer and nobody was calling him LeChoke and all that stupid crap, that LeBron is the closer.
Well, one person still does that, but nobody else.
Right. But, you know, he lifts a lot of weights. He's jacked for his age. So congratulations to him. Skip Bayless, if he didn't know who we're talking about. There are expectations and habits that need to change. Whatever is the mechanism or...
Okay, but do you think that this is a function of... You know, because you sort of alluded to whatever, but it does make a difference. If you think this is something that, you know, the organization and then especially LeBron, since he is driving, you know, however this plays out.
I think LeBron has to unbreak habits, if that's what you're talking about.
I'm saying, is this something where you think LeBron is willing to say, I want Anthony Davis to, you know, Anthony is needs to be our best player and all these other things, but is unwilling to let him be the best player.
I want to make clear what I'm saying. I don't think it's an unwillingness because of anything with LeBron's ego or wanting to be seen as the guy. I think it's a control thing. LeBron is very used to being that guy in the fourth quarter. And, you know, you see often with superstars, the, you know, like the truly elite among the superstars, we saw this with Kobe, you know, and there was often a very similar dynamic with Kobe and Powell, where Powell would be used a lot early in games to set up wins. And there was an expectation that Kobe would take it home. And some of this has to do with who's controlling the ball, you know, wings versus bigs. But I imagine there is an element of ceding control and trust on LeBron's end that has nothing to do with whose team is it or ego or anything like this. There's habits on LeBron's end. There's expectations of everybody around them that LeBron is the guy that does this. There's expectations from AD. I mean, these are longstanding habits that I think require rethinking and breaking. And you know, it has nothing to do with anything nefarious going on or LeBron consciously saying one thing but then doing another. These are hard, you know, you're hardwired to do certain things. And also
it's an important distinction. And I actually have a couple more questions to that, because I think the way you're talking about it is different than a lot of other people would. More nuanced, because, you know, that's not a thing in our current world. So I have a couple more questions about that, and because this is a critical conversation for the Lakers and what their upside is going forward. Plus, we're going to try to get to it at least. Austin Reeves has been crushing it of late, and that's kind of a big deal too. So that's next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by LinkedIn. These days, every new potential hire can feel like a high-stakes wager for your small business, and you want to be 100% sure you have access to the best qualified candidates available. And that's why you need to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs helps find the right people for your team faster and for free. It's easy to lay out all the information about your business, the work environment that you want to foster, the projects that you do, and then from there, add the job you're looking to fill and the purple hashtag hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile to spread the word that you are hiring. Simple tools like screening questions make it easy to focus on the candidates with just the right skills and experience so you can quickly prioritize who you want to interview and hire. Small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates that you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at LinkedIn.com/LockedOnNBA. That's LinkedIn.com/LockedOnNBA to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
So one of the things that we've talked about, you know, on Monday's show, you know, and we kind of referenced a little bit even last week, is this notion of like whether it's kind of fake that AD, who has, you know, gone for 38, 37, 37, 38, and 30 in his last three games, and is averaging 16, some over 17 rebounds a game in that stretch.
Incredible.
Right. He's been amazing. Whether or not it's real, because it comes against not only bad teams, but bad teams with bad front courts. No Jakob Poeltl with San Antonio on Sunday, no Stewart on Detroit, and nobody. One of the things that I think is important about that, though, is like you need the time for the muscle memory to develop of Anthony Davis being the guy, being that dude that everybody said, you know, needs to be the Lakers' best player. We've said it for 2 years. Anthony Davis, for the Lakers to really thrive, Anthony Davis needs to be their best player, like statistically, go score the most points, be the guy who's more likely to be the MVP or whatever. LeBron can still be the face. He can still be the core. He can still be the driver. But like, you need AD to be the dude. But you need a stretch of games where that allows him to do it. And so the value, I think, for these games is that, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 games of it. Now it's like, okay, this is my thing. This is what I do. If you're saying that LeBron in some ways needs to break the muscle memory of fourth quarter guy, how does that happen? Like, when does that opportunity come? That doesn't sound like an easy thing to do.
Well, I mean, it starts with getting LeBron back on the court. And I'm going to guess, and again, this is just a guess, I don't think he's going to play against Phoenix because I don't think they're going to have him play in a game before he's had a full contact practice to see how he reacts to it. Obviously, we will know later on today whether or not I'm right or wrong. But I think, you know, LeBron pays a lot of attention to things that are happening. And he can see the way Anthony Davis is dominating. And he can see the way that this can make his life easier if you find the best way to utilize this, you know, as somebody in his 20th season who just simply cannot handle the physical demands on a game in, game out, 82 game season, hopefully some playoffs to go with it. LeBron can't do it the same way he used to. So there is going to require some rewiring from LeBron. I think, you know, maybe the coaches need to be a little bit creative in some of the stuff that they look to do, or maybe more specific. And it will also require AD to make sure that LeBron knows this is what he wants. He wants it in these moments down the
kind
stretch.
Of shrink back a little bit.
And he's got to deliver. AD has to be assertive on like 10 different levels of this is the way. This is why I brought up the idea, or really James Worthy brought it up, but I talked about it on a Monday show, the idea of that conversation that happened between LeBron and Dwayne Wade in Miami, when Wade eventually just said, "You're the best player on this team, LeBron. Like, I may be the face of this organization. I may be the greatest Heat in franchise history, but you need to ultimately be the guy that things revolve around the most, that, you know, is our deliverable down the stretch, like the guy." And I think it requires a lot of rethinking from a lot of different people. Again, even if you believe there is nothing ego-driven going on anybody's part, it's a functionality thing.
I wonder too how much, as long as we've covered basketball, I've never claimed to be an X's and O's guy, an X's and O's expert. I think enough to get myself in trouble. Both of us tend to try to find the people who are more steeped in this than we are. How much of this is what gets run? It's a very pick and roll heavy league in the fourth quarter now across the league, but that suits LeBron and AD. Like, there's a lot I think that can be in here if everyone keeps beating that drum. If LeBron recognizes it and actually follows through in the way you're having, breaks some of those habits. If AD, fascinating stat that they were throwing out on Spectrum on Sunday after the game. Anthony Davis is scoring closer to the basket this year than he has, I think they said, in any year of his career. If not, it's been a while. Certainly in any of his Laker years. He's only taking barely one three-pointer a game. That part of it, like, we no longer talk about Anthony Davis as the 3-and-D, you know, stretch five kind of player who can go out and beat you from the perimeter. And then it's like, no, go dominate down low. And if the Lakers can continue being just your garden variety poor shooting team.
You know what, though? They've been bet like the last 10 games, the Lakers have averaged almost 36% from three. That is more than enough to get it done.
Absolutely. 36 is generally around league average. And,
right.
That's what I'm saying. But like, but even the last few games, 33, 34, 35, that's okay. That is good enough to where you will hit enough three-pointers that teams need to play defense against you. They're not going to zone up and collapse with five guys anytime anyone gets near the paint. You can have driving lanes. You can run screen and roll. You can do Austin Reeves, we may not have a ton of time to focus on him picking up his offensive game, you know, finding the right catch and shoot shots for Westbrook, Kendrick Nunn being a playable human who can hit a three-pointer, like Troy Brown's ability to knock down a three, everyone, like, if they just need just enough to open up pick and roll space, to open up driving space, you know, for those little ISOs, whatever it is, to give Anthony Davis the ball on the move at the top of the key and let him put the ball on the floor and do special Anthony Davis stuff. They're showing signs of offensive competence to make that happen. They were so bad before, and I don't think they're that bad now. And I think those things can help Davis become that guy, because as a big, you do have to figure out where you're going to get him the ball and how you're going to get him the ball in those advantageous positions. And that does depend a little bit on the supporting cast. And if the supporting cast is looking better and that's legit, all of this contributes to Anthony Davis being that guy. We'll see what happens Tuesday night with the Lakers. This will be either one of those things that the post game is an exciting look forward as to where the Lakers are going, or it will be filled with darkness and pessimism. Either way, be a fun show. So we'll Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you go to check all of that out, as well as, of course, the audio version. We appreciate everybody joining. We'll see you on Wednesday.